Planning for your next trip? Elevate your travel style with Quince. Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/trip for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
Wow.
Hello and welcome to the Abroad in Japan podcast, probably the best way of learning about life in Japan without actually being in Japan. I'm your host, Chris Broad, and we're joined, as always, by England's top Japan enthusiast, Mr. Pete Donaldson himself. Pete, how are you doing this fine Wednesday?
I'm doing pretty well, to be honest, Chris. I've just noticed we do this on video now, and we're loving seeing each other's little faces. You've got a lovely little YouTuber's bedroom, and I'm in a dirty old office. And... But we get little bits of information about each other's setup, and I have noticed that I have 1 terabyte of data free on my hard drive storage solution, and you, however, have 600 gigabytes. So you are running pretty low, mate. You can tell it you're a video editor. I fear for your data management solutions.
This is what it's been reduced to. Trying to one-up me on data storage, Pete. How low?
I can't go anywhere, can I? I can't do anything. I can't go anywhere. It's all very upsetting.
It's a low blow. A low blow. Even by your standards, Mr. Donaldson.
Yeah.
I have just got back from Hokkaido. It's been such a weird week. I was really excited. So last time, before I left this podcast last Sunday, I talked about going to Hokkaido. My plan was to reach the most extreme northern point in all of Japan, Cape Sawyer, as it's known. Yeah. And I made it. Good news. Got back in one piece, just about. But we made it there. Took 4 days through blizzards and whatnot. But so much stuff went wrong. Like on the first day, we tried to film in Hakodate fish market, right? Really nice fish market. But because of the whole coronavirus situation, it was empty. There's no overseas tourists, right? And me and my friend Pete, who went on this road trip, were the only ones there. And it was really awkward. Every single shop, the staff outside, like begging us. They're like clinging onto
something.
Us. Yeah, like they're like holding our arms and like, yeah, this way. And we're like, no, we don't need any salmon. Not this time in the morning. And they were like, it was really like, sad. I felt it was like a war zone situation. It was quite depressing. And then we went to there's an abandoned town in Hokkaido that got destroyed by a volcano, right? They call it the Pompeii of Japan, and I've always wanted to go there. And we got there, and it was just gone under like 3 meters of snow. So imagine if Pompeii just buried by 3 meters of snow, so I couldn't see it. And I found a little tourist guide man, and he was like, yeah, you can't see it in winter. Come back in summer. And I was like, bugger. And then we got to our hotel after 5 hours of relentless driving through the snow, walked into the hotel, and it was like this it was a bit like a hostel, I guess. And it had like a really nice a Chinese-style restaurant on the ground floor. Mm. And then the second floor was this sort of dormitory that Pete and I had booked out. And we went in the restaurant, and I think the chef, really nice chef guy, who runs the place, he was there cooking. And I said, hello, we've got a reservation. He went, no, you don't. And then just turned his back on us. And we're like, oh, we just traveled for 5 hours. I'm going to kill someone. We've definitely got a reservation. He's like, nah, no, you don't. And just kind of carried on like frying.
Oh, no, did you actually have a reservation?
We did have a reservation. No, it took me like 20 minutes of like getting my booking.com details out. I'm like, look, we definitely have a reservation. Look at this. Look at it. And he was like, oh, yeah, you do have a reservation. And like, it's, oh, God, everything just went wrong on that first day.
Well, oh, awful. No, that's terrible. It sounds like a lot of those problems could have been solved, every last one of them, with maybe a flamethrower. Because you could have melted the ice, melted the snow, and also attacked a man for being belligerent.
Absolutely. I don't know how a flamethrower would have gone down in Hakodate morning market. Maybe could have been an interesting way to cook some seafood. But that video will be out in, I think, 3 or 4 weeks. And also, I ran out of fuel for the first time in my entire life. 14 years of driving, I ran out of fuel in the mountains of Hokkaido. And it was the most humiliating, crappiest experience of the last 8 years. And I felt like such a mug.
Such a mug.
I was so bad, honestly. I dropped off Pete at the end of the journey. We went back to Chitose Airport, and I dropped Pete off the airport so he could fly back to Tokyo. And I was going to drive 5 hours south to Hakodate and take back the car we rented. Mm. And I was in such a hurry to leave Chitose the next morning. So I dropped him off the night before, like in the night, stayed over one night, and then drove in the morning. And I thought, you know what? I'm going to take the mountain route, the really remote, beautiful, stunning route that's an hour longer, just because I've always wanted to. And for some stupid reason, I didn't check to fill up the car with loads of fuel. And I got about 1 hour into the mountains in the most remote, scariest place ever, where there's probably bears at every turn. And the car was like, ding, 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 you've got 10 kilometers of fuel left. And I was like, what?
Oh, no.
And I had a wave of dread that I've not felt in a very long time come over me. Like, you know, that feeling of anxiety when you know you're absolutely fucked and there's nothing you can do. I was like, oh, God. And the only lucky thing that happened, though, was in the middle of nowhere, amongst the mountains, there was a group of like 4 or 5 construction workers, like building a bridge, like you do. Nice. Yeah. And I like pulled over with 10 kilometers of fuel. And I went up to this man who was one of those glow stick waving people. You know, they wave like cars.
Yeah.
And I was like, I literally was like, help, I've run out of fuel and I don't know what to do. And he was like, oh, Gambate. And I was like, not Gambate. Give me some petrol. Give me some fuel. Help me out here.
He wouldn't have the same fuel, would he? The stuff for his generators and stuff. Or...
I think they did. I think they might have done, but they didn't. They didn't have enough to help me. But what Gambate. They did do is I'd driven
just
up a mountain.
Give you some goodwill.
Yeah, Gambate. Oh, that's the least. Thanks, I hate the word Gambate. Every time you're in a life or death situation, it's just like, well, good luck with that. Have fun.
You can
Bye.
Do it.
Yeah.
What's the difference between Gambate and Gambare?
So Gambate means to do your best, right? To do your best. Right. But it can kind of be used in a sort of good luck way, like Gambate, you know, good luck. Right. But it means to do one's best. And I always find it a little bit patronizing. But anyway, it means good luck and it can be a good way. But like it came off as condescending and kind of, well, good luck with that. And I was like, come on, help me. I'm a fresh-faced foreigner from the sea, from the shores of UK. Help me out here. And the only thing you could do is tell me that like 8 kilometers down the road, there was a little construction worker lodging area where they had like a telephone and some equipment. And another point, my phone had no data at this point. Like my phone, there was no signal because we were in the middle of the mountains, 50 kilometers from here. And I looked at my Google Maps thing and it took like 20 minutes to load up a Google Maps image, right? And it was like, the nearest gasoline stand is 20 kilometers away. And I was like, motherfucker. Anyway, I managed to put the car into neutral and roll down this hill.
That's a good idea.
With a few kilometres to spare. And I sort of trundled into the car park with the construction workers. They were like digging some snow out of a hill. And I was like, hello, I'm screwed. Can you tell me where we are? Like, I don't know what to do. And they like laughed and they like gave me a cigarette, which helped. And
did you break your cigarette fast?
I
and
did.
You just smoked a tab.
It made
next
everything
to a, next
better.
To a, next to a pet, next to a big petrol can they've given you.
It made everything better. The only way it could have been better is if they had like some gin tonic in a flask. Yeah. But like they, I was like, where are we? And they were like, we don't know either. But like, because it was so remote. It's like the road that nobody ever goes down in the middle of Hokkaido. And, eventually they kind of helped me work out my position. I was able to use the phone to like ring up the equivalent of the AA, like the Drivers Association, JAF they call them, Japan something Federation, Automobile Federation, JAF. And they came out after about an hour and a half, and some guy who'd driven like for an hour to get to me with a can of 10 litres of fuel. And he was like, here you go, here you go. And he pulled that in my tank and I was good to go for 50 kilometres, which got me to the petrol station. But seriously, terrifying. And I was lucky I met those construction workers, I think, because I don't know what I'd have done. I'd had to have got out of the car and walked to somewhere, I guess. And
what was Pete doing at this point?
Well, I dropped him off at the airport the night before, right? So I was on my own. If he'd been there, I could have eaten him and like cannibalized him and, you know, lived in the mountains.
Melted his bones down for oil.
Exactly, exactly. Yeah.
But oh, I'm sorry you had such a successful trip to Hokkaido.
It was
I'm going to go and look at Russia.
Yeah, and I didn't even see it. After all that 1,000-kilometre journey, I didn't see Russia. But we got to the most northern point. And it's, I'll tell you what, it is insane up there because you get to the sort of the last hour stretch of Japan's most northern point of Hokkaido. The sea starts to turn to ice. There's like icebergs and things, and the coast, the water just gets frozen. Which is something you never see down further south in Japan. Like, it really did feel like edge of the world level stuff. It was really quite cool. And it was sod all up there, nothing of conceivable value. But it was kind of anticlimactic. You get there, you get out of the car, and you go, oh, we're here. It's good, isn't it? Took a photo, got like blown over by some wind, and that was it.
Did you not even get like a keychain or anything like that?
My friend Pete got a mug, and that was it, a celebratory mug.
You know. Yeah. Should have filled it with fucking petrol.
How dare you?
Sorry you had such a terrible time. But and also, like, on top of that, of course, you experienced what can only be described as a weird 10-year-old aftershock.
God, yeah. I mean, flipping heck. And just as my luck was starting to turn around, so the same day that I'd run out of fuel, right, there I was. I turned up in Hakodate. I was like, well, I made it in one piece. Thank you, God. And then like 5 hours later, the worst earthquake I've ever experienced knocked over like the entire hotel. I was like 12 stories up in this hotel, right? And the whole thing was shaking. And with an earthquake, right, things shake, right? You'll hear like this rattling sound. It'll sound like this.
Yeah.
It's pretty uncomfortable and pretty terrifying. But in a hotel at that height, in a built skyscraper at that height, what you don't really get that. You get more like a swaying feeling. You start to feel dizzy. Yeah. And I thought, oh, maybe that's the strong zero that I've drunk to get over the stress of the car incident. I thought, oh, maybe the strong zero is kicking in. But it wasn't the strong zero. It was a 15-story building shaking from side to side for about a minute in a never-ending earthquake. And a minute is a lifetime during an earthquake, right? It just, usually an earthquake, most of the ones that I've encountered are magnitude 4 or 5, whatever. And they'll last, you know, 20 seconds. You'll be like, oh, that's scary. And you'll hear like the window will rattle. And you'll be like, oh, that's...
Yeah.
But this one, it had that. The first 20 seconds, you're like, oh, it'll be stopping in a minute. And they just didn't stop. And it's like, oh, crap. Oh, God. Oh, dear. Mm. And it just gets worse and worse. And the shaking and the swaying gets worse. And I was like, oh, crap, I don't know what to do now. And I remember I got out of bed and like threw on my clothes. And I was like, how do I leave the building? And there was a lift.
Take the lift.
I was like, yeah, I was like, I could get in the lift. Yeah. Probably shouldn't. So I didn't get in the lift. And there was an emergency stairwell. And I remember going down the corridor of the hotel and a few doors had opened. I remember walking past the door and there was a woman standing at the door, just looking terrified, and she sort of saw me walk past and was even more terrified to see this intimidating British guy running past with a balaclava going out to the stairwell. But I was the only one to get to the stairwell, which was rather odd. Maybe the hotel was kind of empty because it was not exactly holiday season.
Aren't you just supposed to stand in a doorway? Like, I mean, escaping is probably more dangerous than actually staying where you are.
I was a bit silly, maybe. I did stand in the doorway at first, but it went on so long, I was like, this hotel's coming down, and I don't want to be in it when it does. So, like, you do start to panic.
I want it to land on me instead.
I mean, yeah, exactly. To be honest, you're not supposed to go outside buildings because things can fall off and smash, and that's a lot more dangerous. But I did start making for the corridor and the stairwell when the earthquake was coming to an end. I thought, as it was coming to an end, maybe I should get out and, you know, maybe they're going to ring the fire alarm. Maybe something's going to happen. And I got in the stairwell And I went down 12 stories, and then I got to the first floor, right, to escape, and the door was locked. I couldn't get out. And I was like, well, if there's a fire or a real proper super earthquake, this would be the end of the Abroad Japan saga, me just dying on the first floor of a fire escape stairwell, unable to get out through the locked door. That would be game over. But so in the end, I went back up a few stories, and I had to get in the lift to the ground floor. And I went down there, and nothing was happening. It was like one person on their phone. The receptionist was pointing to a guy with a ladder who presumably was going to fix something that had fallen down. But for the most part, it was it. And I was like, oh, can't have been that bad then. And then my phone lit up with messages from everyone I've ever met in Japan ever. Oh, my God, do you feel that? Do you hear? Oh, my God, Chris. I was like, well, what's going on? And it turned out the earthquake in question was actually just off the coast of Sendai. And by a weird twist of fate, it was about the closest point in Japan that it was to was where the last video I released about the street market with Ryotaro, that was like the closest point to it. It was like 40 kilometers due east from there. Magnitude, I think 7.2 earthquake and an aftershock. Sorry, 7.1. And they say it was an aftershock of the magnitude 9 earthquake that happened in 2011, which is quite daunting.
That's insane. That sort of blows my mind that it happened in exactly the same place. It's obviously an aftershock from the one that happened nearly 10 years ago. I think three weeks' time, it's going to be the 10th anniversary or something. Incredible.
Yeah, yeah. It's a really
amazing.
Bad twist of fate. Strange twist of fate that, you know, 10-year anniversary, a big event, and then something like this happens. And if you've seen the videos, and there's quite a few videos, I retweeted a couple, the damage was considerable, and I don't think anyone died necessarily. There were 100 casualties last time I checked,
right.
but there's some really nasty videos. There's one guy in a bath, and the bath is like swaying from side to side. But there's other ones where entire people's shelves are coming down, and I was worried that my apartment would be destroyed when I got back to it. But it was fine, actually. Nothing was out of place. A few things have fallen off the shelf. Ryotaro wasn't so lucky. His favourite clock fell off the shelf and broke.
Crime.
Is the real crime. But now his clock is forever immortalised at 7 minutes past 11 when it fell to the ground and shattered. It's a strong reminder that earthquakes are scary. Well, that one certainly was.
And Hokkaido hates you.
And Hokkaido hates me. It's crazy that the earthquake was that powerful, even up in Hakodate, you know, a few hundred kilometers north of it. And clearly it was bad in Tokyo because I've never had so many people message me about an earthquake. So, yeah, it's daunting. But don't do what I did. Don't go for a lift. Don't go for the stairwell. Go under the bed. Go in the doorway. Get some chicken. And wait it out. That's what you got to take away from it.
Was there any of your like close friends who got in bother? They weren't affected by it. Where were they at the time?
I think so. One problem was the bullet train stopped, right? So actually, I think it should be reopened now. But the bullet train between Sendai and Tokyo was switched off. I make it sound like a railway train set. I just turn it off at all. But they have to stop it, right? To check that the old trains are still, the train lines are okay. But my friend Norm, Tokyo Lens, who of course has been on this podcast, he went up to visit Sharla in Morioka, and he was going to go up by train, but he couldn't. He had to rent a car and drive it. And that was like an 8-hour drive. It's incredible. It takes, I think, 2.5 hours to get to Morioka from Tokyo by bullet train, or it takes an 8-hour drive. It's crazy. Japan feels a lot bigger when the bullet trains don't work. They certainly do.
I bet. Yeah. I can see why they exist now.
Loady. Hopefully you won't have to endure anything quite like that, Pete.
I'd love the opportunity, mate, to be honest.
I mean, everybody wants to, right? But if you've been to the Kobe Earthquake Museum, where you can have a simulation.
Yeah, I kind of fell out of love with experiencing an earthquake after that, to be honest.
Exactly. But not overly fun. And hopefully it won't bloody happen again. Touch wood. Certainly in the run-up to the 10th anniversary of March 2011. But now, story of the week. We've got a story this week from Andrew. And it's a story about, I don't know what it's about. What is it? So, hello, Chris and Pete.
Have a read.
My name is Andrew, and I'm from Arizona. I have a story of a weird encounter I had while in Tokyo on my study abroad. I was visiting Tokyo from where I was studying in a small village in Fukuoka. I came to meet a friend who was coming to visit Japan, but his plane ended up being a bit late. So out of boredom at the hotel, I decided I needed to go out and explore and check out the surroundings around my hotel. Deeply missing Mexican food, I figured being in Tokyo was going to be my best opportunity to find my beloved sustenance. I set out post haste, and after following Google to my nearest place, nearest Mexican restaurant, I arrived around the corner at a good Mexican restaurant. I was the only one inside, and I was quickly seated. Using what little Japanese I knew, I ordered some tacos. Good man. The gentleman was totally bewildered, and he told me to hang on just a minute. I went back to the kitchen without taking my order. I thought maybe I'd somehow butchered ordering tacos. I waited for a few minutes, and he came back to the table. He crouched down and looked like he was going to write down my order when he asked, "You live here in Japan, don't you?" To which I replied, "Yes, I currently live in Fukuoka." He again got up and went out to the kitchen without taking my order. Several minutes later, he came back, crouched down again, as if he were about to take my order. And then he asked, "What do you think of Japanese women?" God, I was totally confused by the question. It was a large leap in conversation from "you live here" to "do you like Japanese women," especially with the large amount of time in between the questions. I decided to humour him anyhow. He was a younger guy, and I thought maybe he just had an interest in creating some casual conversation with a foreigner who spoke some Japanese. After I replied, "I like Japanese women," he then got back up and went to the kitchen again. This continued for at least another 20 minutes, where he would ask a few questions, then retreat to the kitchen for a few minutes, come backwards and forwards. The questions became increasingly more pointed, like, "What kind of Japanese women do you like? And what hair length do you like?" As if he were creating a Mexican food piece of art shaped like my ideal Japanese woman. Good God. After many trips backwards and forwards, he finally took my order and promptly brought out, this is 20 minutes later, he promptly brought out my tacos. To my disappointment, they were not shaped like my ideal woman. They were just tacos. Maybe my Japanese was worse than I thought. The questions stopped after my tacos came out. The weird back and forth conversation amounted to nothing. I waited a few minutes after having my meal and nothing, but the bill came. I paid my tab, thanked them for the food, then left. Have either of you ever had an encounter like this one? Maybe it wasn't as odd as I think it was. Anyway, thank you for the podcast, guys. Keep up the good work. Andrew, what do you make
of that? Amazing. I think that's how the census is completed in Japan. You go to a Mexican restaurant and a man asks you about your life, about what you like, what you don't like. That's market research, but it's done by Mexican restaurant employees. Yeah, very, very strange. It did sound like he was going to make like a beautiful, taco corn-based woman.
Taco corn-faced woman.
Yeah, exactly.
I don't think I've ever experienced anything like this. I think what happened is pretty obvious, though. Like, there was someone in the kitchen who is a woman who probably saw Andrew go in and was like, "Oh, he's attractive." And the staff
was
like,
"A bit of something."
Yeah, like they're probably like having a bit of a laugh. And he was like, "You know what? I'll go and chat him up, see what he's like, see if he, fits your criteria." Something like that. And that is what went down. And then clearly, unfortunately, the woman was like, "Nah." Could have been a guy could have been anyone.
Exactly. Yeah. Well, I mean, I guess maybe I think the server, the waiter came out and did that and he was going back into the kitchen and he had like a little, like he had a wig and he was going to like dress up as his perfect Japanese woman. But he dropped his wig in the mince, so he couldn't use it.
He dropped his wig in the mince.
I'm just speculating. I don't know.
I mean, what do you think, guys? What do you think has happened in this situation? You should tell us where this place is, this Mexican restaurant in Tokyo, Andrew. Maybe we can go and do some research, follow it up. There you go. It feels like the beginning of a romance that could have happened, but sadly did not.
Or a terrible murder. He's putting women in the food. Oh, God.
Like Soylent Green at a Tokyo Mexican restaurant. Dear, oh dear. Well, we talked about the earthquake that hit a few days ago and how awful it was, but there's been another earthquake of the political kind, a political earthquake involving the Olympics and the ramblings of a rather silly man, former Japanese Prime Minister Yoshihiro Mori, who went from being a political asset, given he was the kind of the overseer of the Tokyo Olympic Games, went from being this key figure to being a liability, threatening the already cloudy outlook for the Summer Games. I don't know if you've heard about this, Pete. It was actually reported in the Global media. Do you know anything about this, what I'm talking about?
Yeah, huge. I mean, I think it, advertisers are pulling out certain, I think athletes have expressed a lack of interest in getting involved with the games. I mean, it's just, I think the biggest surprise, and certainly I follow a few Japanese sports journalists or people who are based in Japan, and the big surprise is that it's not that big a surprise. You know what I mean? Yeah. Like the most harrowing thing is that it's not uncommon for this kind of sentiment to be expressed in parliament even or you know, head of a body of such a big, important, you know, far-reaching organization. It's a real shame, but I hope that the global exposure will change a lot of minds and change a lot of attitudes in all parts, in all walks of Japanese society.
Absolutely. And for those of you that don't know, what we have kind of missed this news story, quite a lot of you guys have also been messaging me about this to talk about it. So a few weeks ago, council members of the Olympic Committee, sort of the Tokyo Olympic Committee, were discussing the issue of why women are not equally represented on the boards of sports associations and committees. And Mori-san, Yoshiro Mori, this very powerful figure, you know, overseeing the Olympics, and a former prime minister, he chimed in and said, A board meeting where many women attend takes time because women talk long, because it comes from their competitive nature. He then continued, there are about 7 women in the Tokyo organizing committee of the Olympic and Paralympic Games, but they all know their place. And that is exactly what you don't say when your already rocky Olympics is limping on. The final nail in the coffin, piss off every woman ever. And just anyone who's not from 1925. I mean, what the hell? Why would you do that? Why would you say that? It later turned out, though, that this guy, I mean, I don't know the ins and outs of all these Japanese politicians. He's clearly a big figure, but he had a lot of, like, a history of doing silly things, like political gaffes during his career. Like, I think he was prime minister from 2001 to 2005, and he just kept doing stupid things then. It's such a common story, though.
Gaffe
like,
machine.
It's a gaffe machine. It's just so common that there's a politician in Japan, like a guy who's like 85 or 82, who says something that he should have just not said, like just keep to himself.
But like, you got to think, like, what is he saying? Yeah, what's he saying in private? You know what I mean? If he thinks that is acceptable to say on a public stage, like, wow. I mean, what kind of opinions does he keep to himself? That's the thing, isn't it? Jesus.
I know, right? And when they called him out on it, he apologized not for what he said, but for making people upset or something. Like, he did it in a sort of awkward...
I'm sorry you're upset.
Yeah, right. It was kind of disingenuous, and that made it worse. And, you know, it got really bad. The governor of Tokyo, Mayor Koike, she decided not to turn up to the meeting, a really important meeting last week, and that was, I think, pretty much the end of the road for him. You know, that one of the most key figures was like, no, I'm not going then. Fuck him. She's going to, I might talk too long, mightn't I, Mori-san? I might go on a bit. Ridiculous. What was he on about? But he's such a muppet. Like in 2003, he made headlines for declaring it strange that women who don't have children say, please take care of us with taxes. Eventually, you know, effectively saying that if you don't have kids, why should you have benefits, like welfare benefits or, you know, have the backing of the state? It's just done things like that quite a lot, which is never good. There you go.
Nonsense. Utter nonsense.
There you go. But he's being replaced by one of his mates, I think. So probably happen again.
Business as usual.
But, you know, Japan is ranked 121st out of 153 countries in the World Economic Forum's 2020 Gender Gap Report. And it does continue to be a big problem. Like, whenever you look at a photo of all the politicians in Japan doing something, it's a sea of like 80-year-old men or 50, 60-year-old men. And there's like scarcely a woman to be seen. I've actually met, I think, one of a handful of Japanese female politicians, Kato Ayako, who represents the area I used to live in Shonai. She's really nice, really awesome woman. But Japan needs to sort that out big time.
Yeah.
Because this is something that keeps happening. But there you go. Now, before we dive into the fax machine, it's time for a quick ad break.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Mm. HelloFresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
I'm Kate Thornton. Join me every week on White Wine Question Time, the podcast that asks famous faces three thought-provoking questions over three glasses of wine.
It's very rare to be introduced with such a thorough introduction, and it's kind of lovely to listen to all that and go, yeah, I've had a good life, right?
You really have.
How did you find that? I can't even remember. Yeah.
You do your research, Kate, man. I'll tell you that.
Do you know what? You are the only person ever, no other journalist has ever made that connection.
Wow, what a great question.
And receives some truly memorable answers.
And Tom Cruise came, and Nicole Kidman. I go to him, listen, before you go, Tom, I just want you to know, if you fancy a foursome, I'm up for it, and I know Anne-Marie doesn't mind.
When I first dated my now husband, I joined a gym for, I'm going to say, £1,000 a year, just so I could go off and have a poo.
I actually got heckled once in Wales, and there was a bloke at the bar on crutches, and he actually said to me, I'd rather fall over than listen to this shit, and he threw his crutches at me and fell over. Can you believe that?
I've got some cat's ashes, I don't know who they are.
You've been catfished by your own cat.
Exactly, seriously, man.
Dad, have you thought about putting in a breakfast nook? And my dad was thinking of that. Have you thought about getting your own fucking house?
How did you give a duck an orgasm, Craig?
It's good with them, you know.
And then we'll weigh around a duck.
So, if you fancy a sit-down with the likes of Adam Hills, Tom Allen, Hannah Waddingham, Phil Tufnell, James Acaster and Ed Gamble, Daisy May Cooper, and tons more, then join me every Tuesday and Friday. Search White Wine Question Time in your podcast app to subscribe and listen now. White Wine Question Time is a Stack production.
This show is sponsored by BetterHelp. How's your social battery right now? Mine's pretty low after coming back from the craziness of WrestleMania, too many body slams and all that. And I'm pretty jealous of my co-host Chris, who seems to have been exploring Japan's most isolated hotel. He's definitely winning in the relaxation race, but I'm determined to catch up with him. It can be easy to get swept up in social gatherings and spread ourselves too thin, but with therapy, you can learn to prioritize your time and recharge your batteries. It's helpful for learning how to set personal boundaries and empowering you to be the best version of yourself, because you should spend your time on your own terms. So, if you're thinking of starting therapy, give BetterHelp a try. It's entirely online and designed to be convenient, flexible, and suited to your schedule. Just fill out a brief questionnaire to get matched with a licensed therapist and switch therapists at any time for no additional charge. Find your social sweet spot with BetterHelp. Visit betterhelp.com/Japan today to get 10% off your first month. That's BetterHelp, HELP.com/Japan.
Stakhanov's brand new show, My Seven Wonders, with Clive Anderson, is available to listen to now. Clive will be quizzing some of the world's most interesting celebrities, including Griff Rhys-Jones and Shappy Kosandi, about their own personal Seven Wonders of the World. Join Clive and his first guest, Dara O'Brien. Dara talks to Clive about his love for the Irish sport hurling and some of the extra benefits that come with owning a hurley stick.
It's just pleasant to have a big stick in the house every so often. For home security, it's always nice to know that I have an arsenal if I need it.
Oh, bear that in mind if I'm tempted to burgle your house in the middle of the night.
Just do it. Honestly, that's how I stand. I stand naked with my Irish testicles dangling, challenging people.
They discuss finding humour in quantum physics.
It's like saying, is the cat dead or not? Would someone just open the box?
And discovering new passions during lockdown.
Lockdown ran a schism, essentially, between the young comics who immediately went, I must learn new skills. I must learn video editing of TikTok. And I must find new ways to bring back comedy to people. And the older comics went, yeah, retirement, it'll be all right, actually. Exit the guy. Turns out, you know, it's okay.
It's not too bad.
Search My Seven Wonders with Clive Anderson on your favourite podcast player to hear the first episode now.
Hope you enjoy those ads.
And now to the fax machine. What have we got this week in the fax machine, Mr. Donaldson?
Oh, we've got a fax machine fax from Arcadius. Carcardius, maybe. Hello, Pete and Chris. I'm writing to you to share a story that was written in a Minna no Nihongo 2 textbook that came up during my last class. This story nicely ties in with your recent reaction trend because it tells you about a foreigner living in Japan that did something utterly unheard of. Even thinking about that makes me laugh and beats all that has been done by foreigners in Japan ever. To not keep you in the dark for too long, the story is about Migiru-san, who attended a funeral of his boss's mother. It was his first funeral in Japan. He didn't know the customs. When he saw a lot of people lined up neatly with their heads down and hands together at mouth level, he thought that they must be eating something. And when it was his time to pay respects by the altar, he took a pinch of what was in the box standing in front of the picture of the deceased box's mother and put it in his mouth because he thought it was the appropriate thing to do. Yes, he ate her ashes and thought it tasted bad. Question to you both, what was the wildest thing you came across in Japanese textbooks? Topping this act of cannibalism is almost impossible, but knowing Japan, I may be wrong. Also on the next page, there was a story about a guy who thought that Genkan in Onsen is a dressing room and got undressed there before entering. They really must think foreigners are barbarians, do they? Well, they clearly do, it seems. But yeah, this guy, there's a picture of this guy, a little drawing of this guy munching the bones.
Oh, my God.
Very enjoyable. He's got lovely hair.
I mean, who wrote that? Seriously, I mean,
yeah.
Minna no Nihongo is like one of the most popular textbooks for learning Japanese. I can't stand it. It's written to be really dull and boring. And I must admit, this has actually made me want to read it now. it's a great little illustration of a guy like munching the bones while everyone, all these Japanese folks are like praying in the background. You've got this like dumb foreigner with curly hair munching on a sea of bones. It's just like, nobody would do that. Why do you think people are
that
stupid?
Why would you be at your boss's mum's funeral?
What could it have possibly been, though? What could it have possibly been? Ground down ashes. What food would that look like?
Cocaine.
Cocaine.
I don't know. That's it. I don't know. What would it look like?
The ALT bends down to do a line of cocaine at the funeral. Fucking hell, honestly, ridiculous. But that is hilarious. I'm gonna get that book. I'm gonna go through Minna no Nihongo and have a look through that. There you go, folks. If you want to study Japanese, that's the textbook to go for. And it's hello, Chris and Pete. We've got one from Tiara. Hi, Chris and Pete. My name's Tiara, and I live in Dallas, Texas. I'm always on the language exchange app HelloTalk, and I came across this guy's post. He is in a band. I couldn't believe what I read, but his band name is Abnormal Cooking School. Big fan of the channel and Pete's universal remote voice. Keep up the good work. Fun fact, I changed my phone to Japanese to help studying. Sincerely, Tiara. It's a good move. I put my phone in Japanese when I first got here. Now it's in English. It's just very stressful. Put it in another language. Abnormal Cooking School for a band name.
Yeah.
I did actually look it up. I remember when I got this question earlier and I was putting it into our little document, I did look up the band and it's actually not that bad. Like, if you want to discover a new band, I think they're kind of like punk rock band.
There was nothing. Sounds about right.
There was nothing that I saw in their music that would explain the name Abnormal Cooking School as a band name. It's just a couple of guys like bashing out some punk rock music. But remember we had some
good
crazy band names a few months back, didn't we? Can you remember off the top of your head?
I really can't, to be honest.
It was like Salad Bar and things like that. I can't remember. It was like, I don't know. I don't know why they come from, these names, but they never cease to amaze me. Got one from Monica. Over to you, Pete.
We do have one from Monica. Hello to Monica. Hi, Chris and Pete. I went to Japan with my ex before the pandemic and wanted to share with you an unusually loud comment we got on the bus, especially unusual as I know that Japanese are not stereotypically prone to bothering strangers and making a scene. Myself, 5'11", and my ex, over 6 foot, got on a bus in Tokyo only to hear an old Japanese man loudly say, "Takai! Ashiga matai!" I'm learning Japanese, so I'm pretty sure I got the meaning. Takai means tall, doesn't it? Or big or long, isn't it? Yeah. I won't write it here, as I'd like to hear your translation. This gentleman's presumably wife looked pretty pissed off and avoided my eyes for the rest of the journey. Looking forward to your translation and comments. I found this very funny, as the older gentleman clearly meant no harm, and it's a precious memory of my trip. All of this, Monica. So Takai Ashigamatai. What does Ashigamatai mean?
Ashigamatai means I can see your legs, effectively. Right. I can see your legs.
I can see your legs. Oh, interesting.
I mean, this does happen quite a lot. It means I want to see your legs.
Oh, I want to see your legs.
That's rather odd.
Well, there you go.
Yeah. That's rather
very tall.
Weird.
I want to see your legs.
It does happen quite a lot, though. Like, I remember my friend got insulted once, a girl. We got on a bus, and someone on the bus muttered under their breath, "Oh, 靠起来呢," which means, oh, she's got a small face. And I think, you know, they were just expecting her not to hear it, but she heard it and she like scowled at them. You know, I think it was another girl that said it. He must have been in her mid 20s to her other friend who was in her 20s. Oh,
she's got a small face.
Small face.
Maybe the old man was trying to ascertain whether or not the girl, Monica, was two toddlers in a big long trench coat. That's why he wanted to see her legs. You wanted to make sure.
That is definitely what happened, Pete. Definitely. We got one here from James. Hey there, Chris and Pete. My name's James from Alabama in the US. At the time of writing this message, I've just found out less than 10 minutes ago that I've been offered an interview for the JET program, Japan Exchange Program. I'm excited and nervous about this interview because I'm one step closer to getting my opportunity to go back to Japan. Chris, being a JET alumni yourself, could you please share your interview experience along with any tips to ace it? Many thanks, James. Many thanks, James. I remember my interview as clear as day because I was terrified as hell because I knew it was important. Just remember, the moment you go in the embassy or the place you're doing the interview, I think they're going to be evaluating you. Like, I remember I had an ex-JET who was in there who talked to me for like 20 minutes before I went in for my interview. And I think secretly they were assessing me and trying to see if I was good at communicating and being normal. Then they gave me like a spelling test and I had to do some spelling, which is quite daunting. In an era of spell check and auto spell.
Yeah.
Writing with hands.
I don't think many British people would be able to pass that test, to be honest. I know I wouldn't without some real thought.
I remember staring down at the paper and thinking, I've blown it. This is it. I'm done for. But then I went in and there was like a Japanese guy, must be about 50, and I think a British woman who is probably in her 30s. And they're very nice. All they do is they look over your application and they pick out things and they get you to talk about them. And, you know, we've talked about this before, how the only thing on that piece of paper that was interesting was that I wrote about Wabi Sabi, the Buddhist art of impermanence. And I struggled to define what it was, but I don't remember the interview that much. I remember being on edge and being like really overly happy and annoying because they want what I'd learned about the JET program beforehand was that they want people who are genki and fun. So I was trying to be like really happy and fun and over the top. I was like, hello, how are you doing? Yeah. I probably came off as condescending, patronizing and scary. But nevertheless, it worked. So I think your application form, it will do most of the work for you that you've handed in already. So I know. I mean, you didn't have much luck, Pete.
No, I didn't. In fact, somebody messaged me who doesn't want to be mentioned on the podcast, but they wanted to know, you know, if I've got any tips for getting through. I think she called it the EPIC program, but I don't know whether that's
a Korean
really
one.
Different. Is that a Korean one?
That's right, Korea. Okay. Yeah.
Maybe some miswires there, but either way, I did not do very well on getting on the JET program. It was the year after like all of the Nova programs were cancelled for some reason. I can't remember. I think the whole thing just went to shit.
Yeah, just dropping that in there because they all went from Nova to JET, didn't they? Ruin your chances. On the same way that I only got on the JET program because about four people probably applied for it in 2012 because of the bloody earthquake and nuclear disaster.
Oh, yes,
You got screwed because a big teaching company imploded, which saturated the JET program, and I benefited from a nuclear disaster. Yeah.
Yay.
Got one last one from
scumbags.
And good luck to you, James. Best of luck in the interview. Let us know how you get on. And in fact, it will be interesting to hear how the interview went. If you are like an experienced teacher, you have to like do a lesson plan or something in some of the interviews, and you have to. And if you have written that you speak Japanese, they'll test you on your Japanese. So bear that in mind. Whatever you've put on your CV or your application form, they'll pick that apart and call you out on it. So be careful what you've written out on it. And, you know,
I play the grand piano, and they wheel in a big grand piano.
Exactly. It's that bad. So, yeah, bear that in mind. But best of luck, James. Have a good one. Got one last one from Soren from Denmark. He says, "Hi, Chris and Pete. I'm sitting at my PC playing some games and listening to one of the latest episodes when I hear Pete tell about his attempts at the trumpet, euphonium and guitar." for those of you who missed a few weeks ago, Pete revealed he was going to be the greatest musician who ever lived. And then his mum laughed at him when he played a guitar and his dreams died there and then.
Yeah.
And now he's just a podcast man. That's it. It could have been so much more.
Tragic.
But Soren says, "Pete, I'm a professional brass teacher. If you find yourself an instrument to play, and I can help you choose one if you'd like, I'll give you a couple of free lessons over Zoom. Let me know. Best wishes, Soren from Denmark." There you go, Pete. Could kick it back off from where you ended it all.
Yeah, I mean, my partner is very aware that I'm quite a lot louder than she is when she's recording stuff. So I think me busting out, a bit of solo mio on the trumpet, I think would be unwelcome at best, quite frankly. A bit of Louis Armstrong.
Probably. I would pay good money to hear you bash out a Louis Armstrong song. That'd be amazing.
Yeah.
Oh, man. Keep the stories, questions, comments coming in to abroadinjapanpodcast@gmail.com. Next week on Sunday, we're celebrating the 3-year anniversary of the Abroad in Japan podcast. We've been going 3 long years, 200 episodes under our belt almost. So next week we'll be reading out stories from travelers who came to Japan, awkward, disastrous experiences traveling Japan. Something we haven't done in a while, one of my favourite type of episodes. So definitely, if you've got a story travelling around Japan, something that happened, let us know, send it into the fax machine, and it's going to be a lot of fun. But for now, guys, enjoy what's left of your week, and we'll see you on Sunday to do it all over again on the Abroad Japan podcast. Have a good one.
This was a Stakhanov production and part of the Acast Creative Network.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Cats and cat owners deserve better than any old-fashioned litter. That's why I teamed up with scientists and veterinarians to create Pretty Litter. Its innovative crystal formula has superior odor control and weighs up to 80% less than clay litter. Pretty Litter even monitors health by changing colors to help detect early signs of potential illness. It's the world's smartest kitty litter.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Hello Fresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.